Welcome to episode 2 of It's a Dad Thing. It's good to have you back. The feedback we got from the last one was so mediocre, we have decided to do another one. If this is your first visit, well then, let me tell you about us. It's a Dad Thing is an episodic podcast where three men discuss a topic in which none of them have any qualifications or training, mansplaining the meconium out of the journey that is parenthood. My name is Billy Pretzel. I am a teacher and education consultant, husband to Flick, and father to the newly created Melody. Each episode I am joined by Tom Levy, a father of two, three-year-old Ava, and Spencer, who's just a few weeks old. And also Gareth Bennett-Ryan, a performer who, as we heard last week, is trying to decide if parenthood is the right thing for him. This week, we continue our journey by discussing early pregnancy. We cover subjects such as hormones, sickness, mood swings, and more. We do hope you enjoy this episode. Much like we are to parenting, we're new to this podcasting lark, and we're learning as we go, so I must apologise for the sound quality on this episode. We've tried something new, and it worked about as well as trying the cry it out method to get Melody to sleep. Do stick with us. We'll get better at this. And parenting. Hopefully. Last week we were talking about when you make the decision and when you find out. But we're going to move on to the next step in life. So when you have found out and how things change, the way things work, how to help your wife in the best way that you can. I say that, not handle your wife, but we'll come to that in a little bit.
Yeah, handle.
But helping them as well. And
it's not for the women, mate. It's a dad thing.
Yeah. Tom, did you notice a marked difference in Amanda once she became pregnant?
No, we were very lucky that she didn't suffer with sickness and things like that. She didn't have any crazy cravings and so on. She literally just slept all the time. Her body, obviously her way of dealing with it, her body's way of dealing with it was just go to sleep and I'll deal with it. So she did. And then that kicked in quite soon. It lasts a couple of months and then they have this energetic-ish kind of period for a month or so, and then in Amanda's case the tiredness just came back.
Is that hard with Ava this time? Was it harder having her being a lot more tired when you already had a three-year-old that was there?
Yeah, first time around was easy peasy because she just fell asleep after tea every night and I just left her until bedtime and then put her to bed. It was literally right. I didn't have like a baby on. This time round it felt like she suffered more with the tiredness, but it's like I kept saying to her, like, we're going to be having tea, and we don't have to take tea till after we put the bear to bed. So we're having tea, and she'd be like, my God, why am I so tired, I'm so exhausted. I said, well, if you think about it, last time you'd come home from work, have something to eat, you had the luxury of falling asleep at whenever you wanted. Sometimes you fell asleep at 6:30, you'd come in and just crash out and sleep all night. You know, you can't do that now. You can't do anything. Your night doesn't begin until about 8 o'clock-ish, quarter to 8-ish. You know, when we've bathed Ava and put her to bed and we've done story time and come down and, you know, we sit down and then we have something to eat and then you put your fork down and stop. And that's the first time you're actually proper relaxing. And it sucks, but you just adapt as you go. You know, you've only got that time to work with.
So you said you were pretty lucky, I suppose.
Very lucky.
Yeah.
Very, very
no
lucky.
No sickness? No.
First time round, none.
I think
she coughed really hard and a little bit of sick came into the back of her mouth and she just kind of like spat it out. And basically, no. No sickness, no crazy mood swings, nothing. She was just knackered all the time.
She was just herself, is that what you mean?
She's herself, yeah.
Really?
She was just tired, she was just Amanda, but knackered. So and I say, you know, she's a bit grumpy and a bit of an arse at times, but only to the extent where anybody is when they're tired and grumpy.
Yeah.
Not like over the top. This is what I mean. I mean, hands down, I have no, you know, illusions about how lucky I have been through all of this. I'm with Amanda in general anyway. Because like I think we mentioned it last time, like with Ladies Week and stuff like that. None of that shit. There's no crazy mood swings. There's no.
I think we need to come up with a better name.
The Ladies Week.
We just, like, period.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
that could catch
like
on.
Like a specific period of the month. Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about, though. Really, I think, dealing with potential crazy behaviour, because I think I don't know if I've got much tolerance for it, and I don't know if I'll make it worse by going, I know you're pregnant, but can you just behave yourself, you know, and get a smack round the face.
Not that bad. Do you know? I think we were just having a conversation before the podcast, and somebody said you can be pregnant, but it's not an excuse to be a dick to me. And I think I never actually said those words, but I'm pretty sure there was that kind of conversation that I had with Flick. Now, it wasn't very often
in your head, or in real life.
In actual real life.
That's brave. Well done.
No, I did, because I tried to do as much as I could to help her with everything. I was attentive to everything that she needed. I would go to bed early with her. I would make sure that the habits that she was changing, that I was changing similar habits as well. I was trying to be as good a pregnancy dad, you know, a pregnancy partner as I possibly could. And there were still times where she would, quite irrationally at times, she would react in a certain way. The thing is, Flick is very aware of things like that. We talk a lot anyway. We very rarely argue full-blown arguments. We'll have bickers and we'll have things like that. But whenever we're disagreeing on something, we can talk things through. We can have that conversation. We're very open with our feelings, and we're very open with the way that each other's actions affect the other. So I would be very happy to say, what you're doing now is making me feel uncomfortable. And think I'm a bit of a snowflake, but like, you're offending me because you're saying this and my actions are not reflected.
Yeah, you're just calling someone out, aren't you? Just,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as you would.
Well, I used to do the same. It would be like, you know, I think the work with Amanda the most was not to lose it with her, because I know, and we both know, that 10 minutes down the line, if she's being snippy, being an arsehole, in about 10 minutes, she's going to feel really bad about it, because she knows that she's going to kind of calm down and be like, that was kind of all or nothing. So on occasion, I've turned around and been like, you know what, don't be a dick. You know what I mean? There's pregnancy, but there's just being a dick. Or just say, you know what, I'll give you half an hour, I'll go and have a cigarette, and I'll come back.
You're just being mean.
Yeah,
you know what, that's really
hurtful. And you know what, just remove, you know, just kind of, and like you say,
yeah,
because you talk about stuff and you're not living with a lunatic anyway, you know, the second their head gets straight, they're going to go, ugh. You know, I was a bit out of order, you know, and all the time, this is why I used to say to her, don't worry about it, you know what I mean, it's your hormones, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if I'm sat here, if you're saying things to me, and I'm sat here thinking about, is our relationship ending, or, you know, you're describing, you know, your new lover, that's a new board game altogether. But the fact that you're having a bit of a go at me because I didn't change the channel quick enough, and you saw a little bit of the programme that you were trying to plan to watch tomorrow, I'll get over it. We're not calling the divorce lawyers over you snapping at me. So don't worry about it. Don't stress yourself out. Don't start getting upset now that you were snappy before, because that's another thing as well. You know, I'm sorry. Then that turns into that.
Yeah, because and I remember as well when Flip was pregnant, and when me and Beth were around, and you were really supportive every time I was here. You'd offer to do everything, and I remember saying to Beth, right, Billy's making everyone else look really bad here. I'm sure no one else does this, so just don't expect this from me, because I'll be nice to you and everything, but I'm not going to do everything you want. Like, did she wanted something specific, and you went out at like 2 a.m, and I went, I'm not doing that, Beth, for you. So
there's a few things that I did. I may have gone down to the supermarket or something to get her something.
Something really nice that I'm not going to do, yeah.
Yeah, the main one was the first one that I kind of realised that, you know, things were becoming different. Well, I'd say the second one. First one was the peach, but we'll come to that. The second one was the ham sandwich. So we'd both been in bed, and I'd got up because she was tossing and turning, couldn't get to sleep. So I just said, look, I can't sleep at the moment. It's not you, it's just me. I've got things running through my head, so I'm just going to nip downstairs, watch a bit of TV. So I came down anyway, came back up about 12:30, thinking that she'd be asleep. Just as I sat on the bed, she just went, can you make me a ham sandwich? Didn't even open her eyes. Can you make me a ham sandwich? I said, yeah. Do you want it now? Yes, please. Right, okay. So I went downstairs, and I made her a ham sandwich, put it onto a plate, cut it corner to corner really nice, took it back upstairs. I said, there's your ham sandwich. She went, thanks. We wrap it up, I might not eat it yet.
Okay.
So I went back downstairs, wrapped it up, brought it back upstairs. By this time, I'm like, oh, just want to go to sleep. Bearing in mind, I'm up about 5:30 in the morning for work. And I placed it down with the wrapper on it and went to sleep. I woke up about 5:30 in the morning. The ham sandwich was unwrapped and left unwrapped to go stale. And there was one bite taken out of one of the sandwiches and just left on the side. And I had this moment of, you... But I had to suck it up. Because unlike Amanda, she had some real issues with food from the get-go.
Yeah.
We found out about a week and a half in. And from the moment I found out, I went on the internet. Right. And I found a meal plan that planned out the best meals to have, the right pulses and the right beans to eat at the right time, and all the things that you should be eating. And I printed out this entire plan every single day for every single trimester, running right the way through to birth. And I got this and I went out and did some shopping and brought it back. And I said, look, this is what I've done for you. And she said, that's good. Can I have some chicken nuggets? Because that's all she wanted. Just beige food. Chicken nuggets, chips, anything like that. She could eat that. Bread, fine. Anything else? Not a chance.
Isn't that weird?
Anything that was colourful.
I remember my... she wasn't actually my auntie, but... Anyway, you won't go into that. But she...
Sorry.
What?
You won't go into that.
She's my auntie. Well, she's not actually my auntie, but we won't go into that.
I'm thinking, well, deep dark conversation, did you nearly let slip?
I just meant that's not the point of what I'm going to say.
Okay.
It's like, you know, when people go, it was on the Tuesday. No, was it the Wednesday? Oh, no, I think it was the Tuesday. You're like, it doesn't matter, just tell me the story.
Yeah,
it was like one of those moments. Anyway, she used to like getting one of those bath sponges and just sitting with a bowl of water, dunking it in and just sucking the water out the sponge.
Weird.
That's weird, isn't it? But that was a pregnancy thing for her.
I watched a lot of Call the Midwife from when...
As research.
Flick, yeah, got pregnant. I shit you not, one of the best places for research and proven by when I went to the classes later on. Bless you, mate.
Thank you, mate.
When she was giving birth, we were like, we need to get to the 50s.
No, quickly. Bang the television.
Get a bicycle, a policeman on a bicycle now.
Yeah, I used to watch a lot of that, and there was this woman on there that was eating coal, and I looked it up afterwards, and actually it's quite true. People eating blocks of coal, having to eat this coal, and it's the carbon or something that's inside it. Or...
Like you can eat chalk when you're stuck on a mountain.
Yeah.
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 Like she used to, her thing was fizzy laces.
Really?
Strawberry laces?
You know, like the fizzy ones.
I think I might be pregnant. I like them.
So I suppose the shop up the road so many times, but they always came in those like a clear box of like 1,000 strips in it. You know what I mean? And it's always like proper tacky. Like, you know, kids have always been in there with the grubby hands taking them out and stuff. And just on the side, I was like, ugh. But I'm there, and she's like, I'm like, how many do you want? And she used to just get them by like the quid's worth, and they were 5p a lace. And she got, just get me £3 worth. So I like, I do
one
Carol Boyle and I'm there. Basically, like, yeah.
You should have just bought them in bulk and bought the full tub.
I said that.
Yeah. Next time.
Right. But what always blows my mind about cravings and stuff is, I know it's the body craving something. It's not really the brain saying, I want to eat this. It's the body saying, I need more iron.
Yeah.
Or I need... And I know it's all... And I know the answer. It's about your subconscious and your body has made connections about what you put in your mouth, what chemicals it's sucking out. Your body knows. You don't know. It's all subconscious. How does your body know that, you know, because I'm missing some, I don't know, iron...
That coal's going to be the answer. Well, yeah.
Like, a certain thing, like a certain product, like, I don't know, a certain brand of biscuit or something. You know, some women have really specific cravings, and it's like, why are you craving that? And a lot of them said, oh, I've never eaten them before in my life, or I might have had them once or twice in my life, and, you know, and that's probably why the body's craving it, but...
Yeah.
The subconscious is remembered from 15 years ago when they had this one thing, it got like a sudden flush of iron or salt or so, whatever, potassium, it could be anything. But your body's going, we need more of that.
See, there are arguments, because I was doing some reading on this. I went to the internet, which is always true, and there was an argument that because of those things, the things like coal and stuff that you wouldn't eat, and chalk and crayons and stuff, that it's not, those cravings aren't actually that connection to the body. That, yes, there can be some element of that, but actually it's more of a psychological thing. So there are arguments out there that people are saying that it could be connecting something that you remember or something that is deep in the subconscious.
Yeah.
That's not a chemical-based thing of, you know, the olives. You eat four olives. The initial taste of olives, when you first have them, nobody really likes them.
Yeah.
And as children, we don't eat green things because they were the most poisonous things when we were younger.
That's why kids don't want to eat the veg when they're...
Is that a real thing?
Oh, yeah. So that when the children and the young, that's why they don't want to eat vegetables, is because they're programmed in their head to...
Hardwired
don't
to
be
say...
Don't be touching flowers
the green
and
things
picking that up and sticking that in your mouth.
Funny.
You have what's given to you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what's...
If you eat four olives in a row and then leave it, the next time you see olives, you'll go, I want those olives. I really like those. Because it has had time for that chemical breakdown in the body to go, oh, right, yeah, okay. So there's arguments to say that, yes, it's the chemicals, and yes, it might be more psychological. Flick had several kind of sections of her eating habits. So the first one was that beige thing. She needed to eat at any time. Could be 3 o'clock in the morning, could be 5 o'clock in the morning, it could be just after she's had breakfast. My first experience of that ravenous, I need to eat something. I woke up about 5 o'clock in the morning and I can hear a noise. I can just hear... And I lean around a little bit and I look over, and there's Flick, leant over the opposite side of the bed with her back to me, just making these noises, head down. And the Walking Dead thing, I've seen a lot of Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing that comes into my mind.
It's happening!
It's happening. This is it.
She's eating a neighbor's cat.
Yeah. So it's... And I just went, Flick. And slowly she turned her head round to look at me, and as her face became clear, all I can see is tears in her eyes, and she looked at me and went, it's a nectarine. It's so juicy.
So you showed her the tears, not just
splashes of juice.
Splash, yeah.
It was her first experience of waking up just absolutely ravenous, having to run downstairs, grab something, and then come back up. And she just sat there, just eating away at this nectarine. Bless her. You're all right.
Put the cricket bat back under the bed.
I almost killed
you. Yeah, that's it. I do a lot of the cooking in the house, and bit by bit we started to realise that there was no point me doing the cooking, because I would say to her, what would you like? And she'd say, I like this, this and this. Right, okay. So I'd start making it. By the time that half an hour, 40 minutes had come up, she didn't want any more. She didn't want that. So I put a lot of weight on, because instead of just leaving it in the pan, I would go, right, well, I'll eat mine and yours as well. Which is not something that I suggest anybody does. But when she started cooking herself, she could be making it and then thinking, oh, actually, I think I'm going to have that. And because she could see things going in, because she could, she was there and it was smelling it, and she was knows what was in there, it was much easier for her to handle. So I think the food was the big thing for us.
Do you reckon, like, this is a bit of a controversial question then, maybe. So you, neither of you had, like, any awful experiences where Amanda or Flick just, like, lost it and were really horrible or you know, anything really bad. So do you think that kind of behaviour, when it happens, is more to do with who the person is anyway, or... do you think the hormones can actually change them so far? Like, if they're usually a calm person, can turn them into someone that gets really mean and, like, stabby?
Yeah, I don't know. From the little experience I've got and what I've seen, it seems to be either the hormonal thing or either highlights certain temperaments. If you're fiery and you're a bit argumentative and you're a bit of a... Anyway, and you're kicking off every 2 minutes... You know, feeling rough and having that kind of is going to make you even more on those occasions. But then there's occasions that I've heard really placid people, when they go through certain stages of pregnancy, they genuinely turn into a lunatic. Just like really angry or really mood swings, emotional.
Yeah.
I think the be all and end all is it's, they might be the same bullet point things that happen throughout the pregnancy, but it is different for every time. Every woman's different, every pregnancy for every woman mm-hmm. is different. Amanda's pregnancy is nothing like it was the first time around. And it's the same woman, same thing.
I guess she's not the same woman though, is she? Because she's already had she's a mother now, and she's had like 3 years experience of being a mother, she's 3 years older.
No, I just mean, I meant more in the sense of it's the same person, you know, it's not like we're someone else in comparison, you know, she's it's still Amanda.
Yeah.
And it's been okay both times, but they've been completely different still.
Obviously, I've only got one pregnancy to refer to. I know from the experiences that I've had and the people that I've known, it is just that imagining the same person, but like really tired. That's the best way to think about it. When you're really tired and you have that shorter fuse, you're more emotional, you're more prone to watching a film and starting crying. That is, if you think of somebody just on the edge of that, I'm really, really tired and I'm just about to be ill, that is the kind of feeling that I got with Flick and from my experiences of knowing friends and family that have been pregnant. It is that kind of just on the edge of things. I don't think it changes anybody. I really don't. There's some psychology behind a pregnant woman testing their partner. So they test them at the point that they get pregnant, because when they get pregnant, they realise, right, I am trapped is probably the wrong word, but there's no turning back.
You're more reliant on that person.
You've got to rely on that person. And people start to test their partners. So women will start to test their partners in a way of, are they going to stay with me? Because if they're not, I'm going to have to deal with it right now. I need to deal with it right now before this baby comes, because I can't deal with it if the baby comes and then they walk out. So they start testing them by putting them through things, by arguing more. And it might be a subconscious thing. And it is that I want to make sure that we are secure as a unit.
So I'm going to try and break us.
Yeah. So along with that tiredness. And along with that tiredness, you've also got that idea that I need to be sure that you're the right person and you're going to be a good father to my child.
So they put you through a sort of Hunger Games trial thing.
Yeah.
You've got to remember.
Well, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
it's not across the board.
No. I think you've got to remember that you do change as well. I know that I changed and I became a little more childish. I battled a little bit with myself and with Flick a bit, because not only are they going through that moment of feeling trapped, but you also do. I went through a time in early pregnancy when I wanted to watch TV on my own more. I wanted to go and play on the PlayStation more. I wanted to go out with my mates. If anybody was offering to go out and go for a drink, previously, for the last 5 years that I'd been with Flick, I'd just be like, no, I'm going to stay in, or I like staying in. All of a sudden, I wanted to go out on everything. And it was a personal feeling of being trapped, being drawn in, and knowing that when that baby arrives, then you're not going to be as important, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You
and yourself, not you.
Yeah, you and yourself. I'm not the most important thing in my life anymore. I'm not the thing that I need to look after.
So while I am, I'm going
to
spoil myself.
So while I am, I need to show it. But also, I battled against Flick a little bit in that it was very early on, and I was a bit like, why are you trying to make me do this? Why are you trying to make me sit with you? I should be able to go and play on the computer. I should be able to go and write a script if I fancy writing a script. I want to do this and I want to do that. I should be able to work late if I want to work late, because I've got stuff to do and it'll make me feel like I'm ahead. And they were all me almost testing her and testing the situation that I was in to ensure that I still had it. And I had to kind of have a word with myself after a short while to say, you know, this isn't right. You need to remember that you've wanted this for a long time. You need to remember that she's going through this and you need to be there for her because she's going to be as scared as you are. Because it's a shit scary thing. It's a shit scary thing. And the more you go through pregnancy and the closer it gets, the more real it becomes. And I guarantee you, you go to that first scan and you see that little heart fluttering. And it hit me a couple of days later after the 12-week scan. And I'd seen that little heart just... And it hit me and I was a bit taken aback that it's real. Mm. You need to pull yourself together. You need to sort this out. It's not about in 7 months' time. It's about now. And you need to be there for her. You need to be there for your child. You need to be talking to that bump. You need to be doing all the things that you need to be doing.
That was interesting, though. You like and honest as well, and probably not something that people talk about a lot, before that hits and you decide that, you know, I'm going to man up and pull myself together and stuff. The little moments where you start thinking, shit, I don't want this, or do I want this? Do they happen? And what are they like? And how long do they last?
I don't know about you, Tom. I never went through, do I want this? I always wanted it.
When I found out she was pregnant, I got very cold and cutthroat. Like, I just didn't, and especially when Ava arrived the first time, I just stopped giving a shit about 70% of what happens in the world or my life, and it's just
because you were zoning in on
but not in a way like, you know, I'm obsessed. I just thought, you know what, I haven't got time. I like my wife, you know, I'm part of that exclusive club of husbands who actually did the wife. It's hot, I like her, so I like being with her, and she's giving me this little baby bear cutie pops. I just want to be there. I want to go. I'm knackered from work. I want to come home. I want to have something to eat. And I want to chill. I just want to chill.
I meant before that, though, because you were saying you were having those moments where you thought, I should be allowed to go and do what I want. And why are you trying to make me do the thing that you want to do? So I meant those little moments.
I think it was a constant battle. You are going through, and so are they, going through a life-changing moment, bigger than anything that you've ever done before.
It's the unknown, it's like you said before, the unknown. You need to be there and enjoy this experience, and there's a lot to talk about. But in reality, you've got 9 months before these things arrive. It's in the very early stages. Mm-hmm. There's nothing major, you know, anything that's happening, it's happening deep, deep, deep inside of Tubby. There's nothing you're going to do about it, you know what I mean? So the hard part is keeping your head in the mindset that today is an ordinary day.
Yeah.
The contrast, I know it sounds like the contrast between, and I feel so sorry for poor Spencer, and Amanda gets upset sometimes, but it's just a totally different thing. The first time was all just, oh my God, we were constantly worried. And the second time round, it was just like, she just knew what was coming, you know, and she was like, you know, you don't seem excited. It's like, well, I am excited, but I know from experience that there's no point sitting here for this 6 month chunk in the middle. It's like, there's no point sitting here bouncing because there's nothing to do, you know. You've just got to get your head down, go to sleep.
I used to film myself. I'll see if I can find someone, pop them on the website. I used to film myself doing things. I've got a film of me making the ham sandwich at 12 in the morning, and just little ridiculous things that I was doing that I was doing above and beyond. I think it was for me, but I just, at the time, I was like, I'll show her these after she's
not pregnant. It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah, it was a coping mechanism to be able to say, I'm going above and beyond. And every now and again, if she would start to take me for granted or anything, I would say something like, you've got to remember, I'm better than a lot of them out there. And I'm doing quite a lot here, and I'm trying to help.
And I'm recording it.
Yeah. But I never said I'm recording it. My thing was always, I'm going to show her how much I did after we've gone through this. Can't talk to her about it now because she's very emotional, and I wouldn't want to put her through that because I don't want to put her in her face. I want her to relax and go through that.
I want the full effect when I guilt her.
Yeah. But I've never showed her. I've never showed her those.
Well, you've got to cut it together properly and put some music on. Some guilt music.
I think we're in a very privileged position. I think that pregnancy can cause a lot of arguments. And I think because of that testing and because of us as guys kind of stepping out, I think my biggest piece of advice for any guy that's in early pregnancy is just take time. Just remember it's not forever. And your life doesn't cease to exist when the baby comes, no matter what people say, it doesn't cease to exist. Yes, it changes. But all those things that you did, you still do. To be honest, when you get past there, you don't want to do them as much.
The last thing you want to do is...
You don't want to do them. So that's my piece of advice. And try to be aware of when you're being a d*** as well as when she's being a d*** because of hormones.
You know that thing when you tell people you're going to be a parent and then they start going, oh, it's going to be awful, and there's like this... Did we talk about that last time?
Oh, no, we didn't. But yes, they do.
You're
ready for it. Yeah. Oh, bit of Schadenfreude.
You'll never get any sleep.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff. I was talking to a guy about this, and he said that him and his wife decided really early on that they were going to ignore all of that stuff because it would make them anxious and annoyed and stressed and worried. And then because the baby picks up on what the mum's feeling...
Yeah.
The baby will be anxious and worried and stuff, and so it will actually cause what they're worried about happening. Mm. Whereas if they just relax and just take it as it comes,
everybody can say what they want to about it's going to be this and it's going to be this. Nobody knows. I'm probably not selling the podcast very well there, but nobody knows. You can prepare as much as you want, but it's unique to each of you. So people can say, oh, you're not going to get this, you're not going to get that. It's wrong. They're not allowing themselves to have it, or they're, you know, in the position that they're in, they're not able to have it.
Well, they're just not having it. They've just got a baby that doesn't sleep through the night.
Yeah.
That kicks off. You know what I mean? Like Spencer's sleeping habits are completely different to Ava's. Totally different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So our nights are different. We actually have better sleeps with Spencer than we do with Ava. Because she's snack fed all the time. Every 15, 20 minutes, she wanted a quick feed. I wouldn't go to sleep unless she was latched up. Whereas Spencer literally drains both boobs and goes to sleep for a couple of hours, wakes up, has a shit, has another feed and goes back to sleep.
So, we're going to do a new section of the podcast.
Helen Partridge. A new regular section of the show.
Only
happens once.
A new section of the podcast. Each week we'll try and get a question from the audience. Now, I put this out on Facebook and got somebody, a friend of ours, who asked the question this time. And it was about how best to deal with a hormonal pregnant wife. Now, we've been talking a lot about this because it's the early pregnancy. But our task was to go away and to find the best of the internet. I was finding the best answer that I could possibly find to actually help. Tom, you were finding quirky, weird, funny answers that somebody's come up with, and Gaz was finding...
Well, the worst things you can do, the least helpful way of dealing with a hormonal wife, I guess.
So, the best, worst, and the weird of the internet.
Amazing.
Let's start with...
Why don't you go first, Bill?
Yeah. Look through the general stuff, baby centre, mum's net, but I found something that is called The Art of Manliness. Now, we'll put a link up on here. Yeah, it's great. I've not seen this website before in all of the stuff that I was looking at when Flick was pregnant. But The Art of Manliness is a great website. Now, they have a man's guide to pregnancy, how to take care of a pregnant wife. It's absolutely brilliant. And there's lots of stuff that we were talking about today in that, about being sensitive to the things that they're going through, sensitive to the changes that they have. So the fact that they're giving up alcohol, now it does suggest going teetotal. I wouldn't suggest that. But maybe cutting down and not drinking right in front of their face every single night and slapping your lips every time you have a beer or a glass of wine afterwards, sat next to them while they look at you, is a good idea. If they are giving up smoking and you smoke, do your best to give that smoking up because they're going to find it very, very hard.
Don't antagonise.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Yeah. But just try to go through some of the things that they're going through. Put yourself in their position and also try to hold back on those urges that you have because of the things that you're going through as well. Remember that no matter what you're going through, it's going to be probably 10 times worse what they're going through. So that's the best. Again, it's the Art of Manliness is the website, and there is A Man's Guide to Pregnancy, How to Take Care of a Pregnant Wife, and I will put that up on our website. Gaz,
okay.
What about the worst? We've had the best.
Well, there's obviously more on the internet to help guys with what to actually do rather than a website about what not to do. But I have found a few clangers, really. So here's a couple of things you could try if you want your head kicked in. You could tell her that you liked her better before she was pregnant. I can't see anyone actually saying that. I mean, that's never going to work, is it? You could explain to her that if she wanted a baby, then this was what she was going to have to go through, and she should have thought about it before.
You knew this was coming.
Yeah.
It's not like you weren't warned. Don't tell her this is how all mothers feel, and it's not special for her. Don't suggest buying new clothes, colouring her hair, or suggesting she should try and keep an eye on her weight. Don't ask her why she's sweating so much. because it might be the last question you ever ask.
Yeah.
And don't ask her why she's moaning and tell her that this should be the happiest time of her life.
Yeah. It's funny though, isn't it? I can imagine some of my mates saying some of those things.
Really?
Yeah. I can imagine some people actually going, well, you made the decision. You made the decision to get pregnant. Why wouldn't you... That is not helpful.
Just reminded me of something. I used to work in a scaffold yard, and one of the guys that I worked with told me a story about his mate who, when his wife was actually giving birth, so it was a bit different, and she was screaming and crying, going, oh my God, Terry, it really hurts, and all that stuff. He was saying things like, well, I mean, of course it hurts. It was always going to hurt, wasn't it? But you've got to get through it, so you may as well just get it over with as quick as you can. And then you don't have to go through it anymore, do you?
Just crack on, love, and it'll, see you get on with it.
Yeah. Wow.
He was given, the worst kind of support.
I can imagine the midwife's faces. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised the midwife didn't clock him.
I love it. Okay, so that's the worst, Tom.
And a weird, right, so, well. So, I looked on a website called Weird History, and there was a section on how to deal with, it didn't particularly say hormonal, it was more like irate and irrational women in the Victorian times. And one method was, they'd go see the doctor, and he would use in essence, what would be a dildo, a sex toy, to basically give him an orgasm. And that was seen at the time as a way of controlling, female outbursts. I suspect somewhere along the line there's been,
I can imagine the conversation with the doctor going, so what I'm going to do to your wife is I'm going to take this and I'm going to insert it in there, and the husband's going, so that's going to help her, is it? That's for her. Yeah, it's all for her, yeah. I've tried it before, it works really well. I mean, I hate doing it. Right, okay, yeah.
Or explains to your husband why he walks in and you're both naked.
Yeah, maybe that's how it started.
Yeah.
This is a doctor.
A few sleazy doctors, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
not the old doctors are doctors. You're not getting that on the NHS, are you?
And that's it for episode 2. You've made it all the way through to the end. Well done, you. A couple of thank yous this week. Big thank you to my wife, Flick, for looking after Melody this week. We think she's starting to teethe, which is why you probably heard her screaming at various times through the podcast. And of course, to Gaz and Tom. Gaz, you can follow on Twitter at GazBenRye. Tom, unfortunately, is not on Twitter. So if you want to know more about him, why not join us at our new Facebook group? You can find it by searching It's a Dad Thing Stories and Advice on Facebook. And while you're there, why don't you give our page a like? And you can share some of your own stories or ask us a question to be included in the show. Episode 3 will be with you in 2 weeks, where we will be talking about scans, midwives, and issues with pregnancy. So, look forward to seeing you then.